Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor, and there's lots going on in the National Football League. Some of it's unprecedented, some of it could be trend-setting, and we want to try to get into that. So joining us right now on Schooled is going to be Mike Sando from ESPN.com. And so, Mike, I mean, the two holdouts, I guess one that's now a hold-in and a hold-out, they're kind of dominating the news. Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh, who's now missed three game checks in three games, and nobody knows if or when he's going to come in. And then you have the Earl Thomas situation. There's normally going to be in a training camp five guys at least now that hold out, but now you have Dwayne Brown that held out into last season. What trend do you think is being set right now with what's going on, if there is a trend, with Le'Veon Bell and Earl Thomas?
Well, I think, you know, the trend is that unless you are Khalil Mack, who is a dynamic in his prime pass rusher type talent, where you're combining the value of the position, the player still being young, you're not going to get as much in return for a trade as probably your fans or even yourself think you're going to get. So it's funny. I was talking to a guy from a team yesterday, and he said people have no idea. Like, the Patriots have made some offers for some receivers around the league that aren't even named receivers, and they're offering more than what Pittsburgh might be able to get for Le'Veon Bell. And it's not because Bell's not great. It's because if you trade for Le'Veon Bell, you can't even do a deal with him. He's a franchise player. And he's also showing himself to these teams to be so intent on the money that you wonder where his motivations are. So I think that's the lesson. I mean, Seattle would have traded Earl Thomas by now if they could get more than they're being offered. It's just not that lucrative what you're going to get in return.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, teams are so protective of anything in the first three rounds, and understandably so, because if you're trying to build any kind of a team or maintain a team, I mean, those first three picks, rounds one, two, and three, usually you need to come up with starters. And what ends up happening now is that, it's not just the trade of the value of the player, it's also the value of the contract, and that diminishes the value of a trade. Again, we're at a time right now with unprecedented number of trades. There's been, 90 so far this year? But again, the value in return is very much in question.
Yeah, I think that there are some GMs who, you know, are not coveting the draft picks as much, and they're probably more willing to make the trades. And then there's others who act as if they have to win every trade, and every one of those picks represents a future Hall of Famer. There's a gap there. So you throw that together with the fact that, like I said, there's contractual issues with the players that you're trading. If you're holding out, by definition, this is a sticky situation. The guy wants a ton of money usually. It gets a little complicated.
No doubt. But the thing, and let's go to the Le'Veon Bell. I mean, of course, it's so unusual to see a player who's making $14.5 million blowing $855,000 a week, particularly when there's no negotiation. I mean, on July 16th, that's when franchise players who've been franchised can't get any kind of a long-term deal. And so this one, it's one where you have one player that's more worried about where his body's going to be next year than where it is this year.
Absolutely, and that's a little bit of a shift, I think, in the league among a lot of players. It kind of goes down to, a lot of them don't even want to play in the Pro Bowl game because you are seeing yourself as an asset. You're seeing your career as something to protect, and you're not just out there only for the love of the game and sacrificing it all no matter what. It very much is. There very much are business decisions being made, and sometimes in the the player's just looking out for himself, just like the team would look out for its own interests. I still think most players will come in if the salary is enough. I think Khalil Mack would have reported to the Raiders. I do. I don't think he'd be sitting out missing. I think Le'Veon Bell a little bit of a special case and still the exception.
Well, in the case of Le'Veon Bell, and I know that there was something I think he tweeted out or put on Instagram or something of that nature, is that he looked at the first game and he saw how they used James Conner, and he kind of said, see, this was what my concern was, because I guess his concern is he comes in and kind of gets used like DeMarco Murray was used for the Dallas Cowboys in his last year there, where he's going to get more than 20 carries a game and 8 or 9 touches with pass receptions and that. And that's why I guess he was worried about his body. But, of course, yeah, that brought the wrath of the offensive line to publicly come and rip him for that.
Well, if you're a team that wants to acquire Le'Veon Bell and he's worried about how many touches he's going to get, what value does that have to us if we're trying to acquire him? So I think what the players on his team were upset about was, hey, they were under the impression he was going to report. So when the season starts, they're thinking, hey, he'll be here just like last year. You know, he's not going to come in and risk it during the preseason, but we'll have him. He will help contribute to a championship caliber team. And when he didn't show, I think they were caught off guard and they said, hey, wait a minute, at least let us know. And so that's where that frustration, I think, was. It was very unusual to see people attacking another player over their business. I mean, usually business is business in the locker room. You don't get too much in another guy's contract and salary. So, again, another sort of factor that makes this situation different from almost all the others.
Now, the different situation is what's going on with Earl Thomas, who took the other approach. He was willing to come in and play. In fact, he's willing to sacrifice his body, as he has for the first 3 games, because he's been flying around being the best safety in football in 3 games. Yet, he now is starting to take the tactics, I'm going to miss practice because if I'm not 100%, if I have a headache, I'm protecting my body because, again, until I get a contract extension or a trade, I'm not going to risk things. Very unusual situation.
It was, and I think Pete Carroll was really frustrated with that and let that bleed out into his post-practice comments in a manner that possibly empowered Earl more, or at least gave Earl, recognized the fact and allowed people to ask Earl about what he was doing. And, of course, Earl said, hey, if they're not going to invest in me beyond my $8.5 million salary in the final year of this $40 million deal, then I'm not going to go the extra mile for them. And so I think he's drawing that line in the sand and saying, hey, I will give all for my teammates during the game. We can see that. He's playing like he always plays, which is amazing. He has amazing tenacity and hustle and all that. But beyond that in practice, not going to necessarily do it just for the coaches.
And I guess it somewhat parallels the quiet thing that had been going on with Marshawn Lynch, because Marshawn kind of marched to his own beat, whether he wanted to practice or not practice, and because it did work. I guess the key in all of this, if you have a situation, it's a distraction, it's a problem, but if you win, that problem minimizes. If you lose, the problem maximizes.
Yeah, and you really have a situation as an organization right now in Seattle where I think they're trying to take back some of the control, where they had really developed this veteran team with strong personalities and had shown a willingness to let guys march to their own drummer. But as you transition back to a young team, that's not necessarily the way it can be for everyone anymore. You want to have people more the way Earl was 3 years ago, when if you had told him he couldn't practice, he would be furious with you, right? I mean, they want that sort of ethic again, and Earl is caught a little bit in the middle as one of the last players from that Super Bowl era who's definitely an older veteran player. He wants the Earl rules and he's insisting on it really because he's upset with his contract. I think if he were being paid to his liking, he would be just like the Earl of years ago and everything would be fine. The problem is Seattle doesn't want to do that. They've been burned on some of these third contracts before, and so whether or not they should pay Earl Thomas, I think they're a little gun-shy because of what happened with Cam Chancellor, Cliff Avril, some of the older players who are no longer able to contribute the way they needed them to.
But the weird part about the whole first 3 games, here's Earl Thomas coming in at the very last minute, limited practice, all that, and yet this is probably as good as far as in coverage this team has had as far as safety play. And again, it's not equal to the Legion of Boom with Cam Chancellor, but with Bradley McDougal being one of the best coverage safeties, along with being able to make reads and doing things like that, I mean, there's some of the best safety play that I think I've seen on this team for a while.
I know McDougal's been outstanding. They were excited in preseason about Tedrick Thompson. I don't think that was just talk to spite Earl. I think that You know, I can remember doing my annual piece on, hey, who do people in the league think are draft steals in each round before they'd even played a game? Tedrick Thompson was the selection for his round. So I think that what we've learned in the first 3 weeks of this season is the young talent on defense is a little bit exciting, and that they need a pass rusher. We knew that. But they're kind of back where they were when they had that young team. They're possibly back where they were when they had that young team in 11 or 12, and you could see it coming together, and you know what they need, but it's maybe better than we expected it to be because there were so many unknowns, and some of those were in the secondary. You're talking about the safety position specifically. I think we know that's a known with Earl and McDougal, and you're right. The play there has been outstanding through the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, but even going further in because when you think about it, the secondary has done surprisingly well. Now, no, they catch Mitch Trubisky when he's still in his growing stage, Dak Prescott when he really doesn't have many open weapons to be able to throw to. But when you think about it, I think Justin Coleman has been pretty much one of the best coverage slot cornerbacks in the league, along with the fact that he can add corner blitz. And, you know, Shaquille Griffin has been fantastic so far. Two interceptions in the Chicago game, limited number of passes allowed. Trey Flowers has done pretty well in two of his three starts. So even though it's not the same as the Legion of Boom secondary, it's still pretty good.
Yeah, and this week they're going to play an Arizona Cardinals team, John, that has seven pass completions longer than 15 yards. And to give you some historical perspective, last year they had 25 at this point in the season. And 25 was the eighth most of any team since 2001. And seven is going to be at the bottom of the league this year. It's one of the lowest totals. So they're going to probably look good again in that secondary, look good defensively. What I'm wondering how well they can weather is I think they have the Rams after that.
They do next, yeah.
And so if you move Earl, you trade him, and then you play the Rams and just get, you know, they put up 35 points like they've been doing on everybody, you're going to hear about it. And people are going to attribute that to Earl being traded. So I wonder, does that trade come down after that? Maybe, you know, maybe closer to the bye week. I do feel like there's a good chance they're going to move him. How are they going to look? You said, hey, they got Trubisky. Now they're going to get Rosen. They got Dak with no weapons. How are they going to look against the Rams when they have to step up and really play a dynamic team offensively? That will be a test.
Yeah, so there could be a strategy to this because you knew one of the strategies, I guess, when they couldn't get the deal that they wanted from Dallas, that they weren't going to make a trade to have Earl Thomas come into Seattle and win a game. So once it got past the first week, then you knew it was going to get past week three. And so now here it is week four, and maybe you're right. If the offers still aren't good enough, you wait past the Ram game to see where it's going to go. Also, following up in this division in the NFC West, how damaging was it for Jimmy Garoppolo to get the ACL injury to what's happening now for where the 49ers are going to be?
Well, it's definitely damaging. I was not one of those teams that was anointing the 49ers as a playoff team or even an above 500 team. I just feel like they're a team still building and that defensively, you know, there's still enough question marks. I'm still not sold on Garoppolo being a great quarterback. So he's had three chances to start. He went two games against the Patriots, got hurt. Then he played last year and did very well in Kyle Shanahan's offense, but they were meaningless games. But still, he did well. And then this year he lasts, what, not even three full games. So I think there's real questions about his ability to hold up. It could be fluky, but you look at his body type, he's not one of those sturdy-looking guys, kind of like Josh Rosen is also sort of a you know, looks a little bit slighter of frame. So I have question marks about him. I think this obviously delays their evaluation of him, but there's no way to put a positive spin on it. It's a nightmare for the 49ers.
Yeah, and the fact that they're not making a big move for a running back or a quarterback, although I guess Mack Breed has done well enough that they don't need to do anything at the running back position. They lost Jarrett McKinnon for the season. Is that, you know, they're almost kind of conceding that this is not the year because it doesn't look as though they're going to make a Teddy Bridgewater move or try to do anything close to filling the void for Garoppolo.
Yep. It looks that way to me, too. And so if you did make a move for Bridgewater, I mean, does that get you to 7-9 at best? He's trying to learn a new offense that's probably foreign to anything he's done before. So it's tough because it's early enough in the year that you may have a lot of losses now. But, the secret is that even with Garoppolo, they weren't winning.
The big story in the offseason was some of the changes to the rules. I mean, the helmet hit was one that I thought everybody thought it was going to be a mess, and it turns out that there have been very few helmet hit type penalties, whether it's the players doing it or the officials not calling it. But now we have the roughing the passer penalty, which is, I think, already now being labeled, maybe at least by Jerry Jones, one of the worst rule changes or worst interpretations he's ever seen. More than 30 penalties for roughing the passer in the first 3 weeks, three on Clay Matthews, and it's gotten so bad that William Hayes tried to avoid one, and he blew out his ACL. How damaging is this rule?
Yeah, I think they've got to do something about it. I know they're going to talk about it, and it's not sure if they're going to make any changes during the season, but I would think that as we get closer, deeper in the season, the playoffs, that there's some relaxation or at least a message to not err on the side of calling the ridiculous ones. I mean, we're going to go from 15-yard penalty for roughing the passer to 15-yard penalty for rushing the passer, R-U-S-H-I-N-G. I mean, that's what it's feeling like. So that can't be sustainable. I mean, we want the quarterback to be protected from the, looking out his ear hole when he gets just hammered unnecessarily. We don't want it to be where you can't tackle them, and I think that's what it looks like now in some of these cases.
Yeah, and it's one where, I mean, the players, rightfully so, particularly on defense, are they're upset, becoming a little gun-shy, and there's no consistency right now. I guess maybe there's more consistency in that call because they're calling it almost all the time, and if you're a defensive player and you're flying in there, I mean, how do you stop your body? This isn't the Matrix, as Dave Wyman always says.
Yep, no, I agree, and that has to be addressed because these hits, like the Clay Matthews hit on Aaron Rodgers Clay Matthews hit on Kirk Cousins was not a damaging hit. I mean, he just brought him down.
Let's do some quick hits right now. How do you read the 1-2 start by the New England Patriots?
Well, I think that we've seen in the past there's a breaking point weapons-wise for Tom Brady. When his weapons dip below a certain level, they struggle, and I'm a little surprised that that has happened because they have Gronk. I know they don't have Edelman, but I think we are seeing the value of a slot receiver in the New England offense. And so I would think once they get Edelman back, as long as Gronk is still healthy, we will see a return to the offensive production that we would expect. In the meantime, it's really been concerning for them. I know they've lost early in the season before, but this is two in a row double-digit losses, and I think they'll beat Miami in week 4, but it's not like it's guaranteed. It could be more of a battle. So that's what I think. I think they got to get Edelman back.
Well, and the weird part is, I mean, here is Bill Belichick traded Brandon Cooks to the Rams. He lets Danny Amendola go to the Dolphins. And now we find out after the Detroit game that there was a trade in place for Rob Gronkowski going to the Lions. Could you imagine how bad it would be, even how worse it would be, if Gronk wasn't there for the Patriots this year?
Yep, absolutely. And, the other part of this for their team is that they have an unusually high number of players with injury histories and injury risks, and I think Belichick's done a great job of managing that in the past, but it feels like it's catching up to them a little bit this season, and you throw on the Edelman suspension on top of it, it is concerning. I can't imagine if they had traded Gronk, I mean, how much worse they would be offensively.
And yet also you look at, this is now the second straight year, which is so noticeable, is that there's just not enough playmakers on defense.
Yep, absolutely. And that, you don't need that as much when your offense is going to score 30 a game or 27, 28 a game. But if they slide back to the pack and just become a regular scoring team, those issues on defense will be easier to see.
How do you read the Minnesota Vikings right now? Because you're looking at one of the most talented defenses in football, 7 Pro Bowl starters. One, of course, Everson Griffin having his own mental issues right now. But, they give up 29 points to injured Aaron Rodgers in a 29-29 tie. They lose 27-6 to a Buffalo Bill team that was favored to lose by 16.5 points. And then you even go back to the playoff game, and that defense gave up, yards and points. I mean, this defense defense is better than it's been performing.
Absolutely. I sort of trust Mike Zimmer to fix that side of the ball. I think obviously their pass rush is critical to having that happen, but that's one thing I think we recognize. They have good talent on defense, and Mike Zimmer's a really good defensive coach. My worries for them were just a little bit broader than that, with bringing in a new quarterback, bringing in an offensive coordinator from the outside, obviously the tragic passing of Tony Sperano at a very critical position of offensive line coach when you don't have a good line, when the line was going to be a concern. Those changes, which are mostly on offense, were the ones that I'm most worried about from a Vikings perspective. The defensive ones, though, are alarming early, and now they're going to play the Rams on a short week. I mean, it might get worse before it gets better.
Very strange. And finally, is there, other than maybe the Rams and the Chiefs, is there a really good team in this league right now?
Well, you know, I think we frequently lament the quality of play in the NFL, but I think there's always been bad teams. And I think there's probably, if we were put on, you know, week three from the 1998 season, we'd be shocked at how ungreat it is across the board. So the system is set up, obviously, to prevent, make it harder to have one great team. And I think I would agree with you to this extent. The Patriots are, you know, kind of spinning their wheels a little bit. The Steelers are trying to find their way. Those are usually two teams that we can count on being excellent. And even the Saints, Falcons have been a little bit up and down. But, you know, in their place, I think the Chiefs are playing absolutely lights out. You know, we have seen, not this last week, but Jacksonville looked really good before that. So it'll settle out. But, yeah, there's not five, six great teams in the league. I just don't know that there's usually been five or six great teams in the league.
Great talking to you here on Schooled with the Professor. We got educated as far as what's going on, as far as the perspective on Earl Thomas and Le'Veon Bell and all the penalties and all that stuff. Mike, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Thanks, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.